Well, good morning. Welcome to a non-political perspectives this morning after seemingly months of entertaining and being entertained by various political candidates for various and sundry offices here in Tallahassee and Leon County. We are back into, shall we say, more important things. At least some folks would like to think so. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome back to our regular kind of perspectives. And we wanted to kind of return to our normal way of doing things by highlighting something that took place here in Tallahassee yesterday. There was this huge get-together at FSU's Turnbull Center. About 350 people, a little bit more than that, showed up. This was the Sustainable Communities Summit 2012. And the theme was collaboration for a more resilient community. I got to find out who came up with that theme, because that is really a cool phrase. So what was the purpose of the meeting? Was it simply to talk about, you know, like, you know, electric cars and LED light bulbs, or was there more to it than that? So how better to find out than to bring on four folks who are in the very thick of the sustainability issue in Tallahassee and Leon County. So before we go to them, a reminder that you are always welcome as part of the conversation too at 414-1234, local number in Tallahassee and the surrounding area, or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. And we have an email address too, which is perspectives@wfsu.org. So let's go around the table here and say hi first to Bill Burlow, project manager for policy and planning for the Leon School District and former Tallahassee Democrat kind of guy. Good to have you, Bill.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
You are right next door to a fellow named Stu Parsons. He's executive director of Sustainable Tallahassee. Welcome aboard, Stu.
Good morning. I'm also glad to be here.
And I can tell that Elizabeth is happy to be here, too. This is Elizabeth Swyman. She heads up FSU's Sustainable Campus Initiative. So we are on our best sustainable behavior out here at the station today. Good to have you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we welcome back an old pal, Maggie Theriault. She's Leon County Sustainability Coordinator. And thank you for helping put this together, too, Maggie.
So glad to spend the morning with you, Tom.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this summit. Let's start with you, Maggie. What the heck was this thing about yesterday at the Turnbull Center?
Sure. Well, we, as you mentioned, we had over 350 people come together, and this was a learning experience to highlight what is already happening in our community, initiatives, nonprofits, individuals, what they're doing to take strides to make Tallahassee a more sustainable area, but also what individuals, families, and businesses can do to pursue their own path or take additional steps of what they're already doing in their daily lives.
Let's run over here to Stu, because you were part and parcel of the whole event for its just about its entirety here as head of Sustainable Tallahassee. Can you even define sustainability? Because we hear that term all the time. Oh, is it sustainable? And it just – what does it mean?
Well, it is hard to precisely define. I think in its simplest terms, it's living in such a way that you preserve the resources that we have now so they're available for future generations, so it can sustain the future generations. And also that in the simple terms, you don't foul your nest while you're doing it. So you're trying to keep your world in a clean and habitable way as well as maintain the resources that are necessary to support us.
Okay. And during the event yesterday, what kinds of things were talked about? We mentioned, you know, electric cars and stuff, but beyond that, what?
There were a lot of things. There was one of the interesting things I sat in. There was a young couple, probably in their 30s, with three small children, and they had last summer spent the summer with no waste summer. So they really worked hard to not contribute anything to the landfill. And after a whole summer, they had a grocery bag left of things that they were not able to dispose of in other kinds of sustainable ways. And they were just a really interesting, warm, and committed couple.
Oh, just one grocery bag?
One grocery bag after 3 months, and it was just fantastic.
Holy
And they've involved their children, who I guess ranged in ages from probably 6 to 10, and they were involved in the project, and they were on the program yesterday, and they made their contributions to the discussion. It was really warm and really wonderful.
All right. From the school district level, Bill, we hear a lot of things about, the LNG, the liquid natural gas buses. You're going through that conversion right now. But what beyond that is the school district doing?
Well, the conservation efforts by the school district are across a lot of a wide spectrum. We've got the CNG buses, and we've got 40 in operation right now. The long-term goal is to replace all the diesel-powered buses with CNG. We obviously can't afford to do that overnight. That has to be done over a period of years. But it's really a comprehensive approach. We've got a clean energy curriculum in the schools right now that involves elementary, middle, and high schools. And we actually had an exhibit at the summit yesterday on our clean energy curriculum. We partnered with the county and Sustainable Tallahassee a few years ago to open up the Sharing Tree, which is a reusable resource center. It's the Sharing Tree is now its own nonprofit. But that's a huge part of what we're trying to do in terms of conservation, not only in terms of educating students, but educating the community, including ourselves. Because what we do know is that, and what the superintendent has said, is that, you know, our generation being the baby boomers and older folks, we've not done a very good job in terms of conservation. And if we're going to have a healthy future as a society and as a world, we've got to hope our younger people do a better job than we've done. And that involves teaching them so they can teach us in turn. A lot of what we found, for example, with iRecycle, which is our recycling program, which was a collaborative effort between the predecessor to Sustainable Tallahassee and the school district in 2007, what we found with that is that students learn from the recycling efforts in the schools, and then they in turn teach their parents. They go home and say, "Mom, how come you're throwing that plastic in the trash bin instead of in the recycling bin?" So those kinds of efforts pay off in the long run. You know, we've got a big effort on the part of the school district has been the reduction of our consumption of electricity, which, frankly, was driven mainly by cost issues, not environmental issues. We're in a struggle to survive financially, and as FSU does, for example, we spend huge amounts of money just on our electric bill. And so since 2007, just as a result of conserving electricity and reducing our consumption, we've saved $4.4 million.
Wow, that is not inconsiderable, that's for sure. As long as you were mentioning Florida State University, though, let's throw it over here to Elizabeth Swyman. We're talking here essentially Florida State University, like a sub-city of between 40 and 50,000 people if you take not only the students but also the support staff and the faculty and all that kind of – that's huge.
We are a mini-city within our city and our community, and we do have – between 40 and 50,000 people on campus, and we really focus on a lot of the same things that our partners are working on as well. So we also have a really great conservation and efficiency program for our energy systems, and we are able to save millions of dollars a year because of that, and we can see those gains. And we can also start to look at some mid-level fruit projects to start increasing those gains. We're really focusing on reducing our energy consumption per square feet of mm-hmm. building. You know, we are a 12 million square foot campus for built space. And so the more that we add green buildings to that, the more we can work on our conservation and efficiency programs, we can continue to see those savings. And the way we look at sustainability is not just the environmental side, but really pushing our students and our campus community as a whole to start considering the social and economic sides. And we can see that in a lot of our programs. And you know, we have a recycling program that's doing really fantastic. By the end of this year, we're going to reach a 50% recycling rate for our campus, and that is huge for us. And we have a lot of different programs that are a part of that, starting to look at waste reduction because we know even though we have a great recycling rate, there's still some work to be done on the waste reduction side and what's leaving our campus and where it's going. And we have actually just partially completed our first greenhouse gas inventory, which is going to be built into a climate action plan to really start looking at the impact that our mini city is having on our community around us as well.
At the same time, you're also engaged in some pretty cutting-edge research when it comes to looking at alternative energy sources and more advanced ways to conserve resources on a number of fronts here.
Absolutely. There's research in so many different departments across the university, and I think one of the more interesting ones is the partnership between FSU and FAMU and our College of Engineering and some of the science that's coming out of there. You can look at some of the MagLab projects and some of the projects we've heard of with the solar sausage and some other alternative energies and solar work that's going on. You know, it's still very much in the research component, and I think FSU does a good job of how to turn that research into something applicable and market worthy and market ready. So I think that's what is so exciting about being at a university that we get to talk about these very high macro level research opportunities, but then go into the community and sort of hopefully make them happen and become real.
Okay. Maggie Theriault, on the county level, I recall when former county commissioner Cliff Thayil became affiliated with ICLEI, which is an organization, international organization, really that seeks to promote sustainability and more intelligent use of resources and all that. He had a number of things, like even retrofitting the courthouse to make it a more energy efficient kind of critter. How's that stuff going?
Very well. The county felt very strongly if we were going to get into this world of sustainability and really make a genuine pursuit of that goal, that we had to lead by example and, so to say, get our own house in order. And I was shocked by the 12 million square feet of the university. I thought we had a large footprint at just over a million square feet, so puts it all in perspective. But the county does have over a million square feet of buildings. We have over 200 vehicles in our fleet. We produce a considerable amount of waste and products just in daily work. So with our over 800 employees, we've started internal to our own buildings with energy conservation, as you mentioned, and over 6 years we've saved just at $3 million in conservation, and some of that's very technical retrofits of chiller systems and water transportation, and others is more traditional of, you know, those squiggly light bulbs or things that would apply to the common person's home or business as well. We have also introduced compressed natural gas to our fleet, and implementing a green driving program, because so much of this is behavioral as well as the technology piece or that hard infrastructure. And that's a lot harder. The investment in infrastructure oftentimes financially makes sense. So if you can find those resources to make the investment, it's a worthwhile effort. But when you talk about human behavior, you know, on a small scale or large scale, that's a challenge, and you have to be repetitive. So with over 800 employees, we're certainly looking at their individual actions as well as our organization as a whole.
Boy, I can understand the behavioral aspects of that, having had at one time a teenage daughter who seemed genetically incapable of turning out a light when she left a room, and still at age 43 is having some problems in that regard right now. Honey, it's expensive. Turn that thing. We're talking sustainability on Perspectives with an all-star panel, and your input welcome to, as always, 414-1234, 800-926 8809, and we'll be right back. Maybe we can call it the Sustainability Quartet. I don't know. We've got Bill Berlow with the Leon School District, Stu Parsons with Sustainable Tallahassee, Elizabeth Swyman with Florida State University's Sustainability Initiative, and Maggie Theriault, Leon County Sustainability Coordinator. And that's what we are talking about as we look back to yesterday's Sustainability Summit that brought in a whole bunch of folks to the Turnbull Center to talk about really cost-effective ways of saving energy, saving resources, and certainly saving money. So that's what we're talking about. You can join in too, 414-1234-800-926-8809. We just got an overview of where everyone was as far as your individual initiatives are concerned. But how does all this stuff work together? I see four silos here. How do they connect? Let's see. Stu,
well,
go ahead.
When I began to be active in Sustainable Tallahassee two or three years ago, what I observed was that there were some large entities in Tallahassee, great organizations that were committed to sustainability and persuading people to live more sustainably, but they were sort of operating independently of each other. So there was some duplication. There was not a lot of collaboration because they were each an individual entity. And I saw a need to try to see if we couldn't bring together the organizations that had major impacts on the quality of life in our county and in our city to work together more and collaborate on projects. And so a year ago, Sustainable Tallahassee provided the leadership to organize what we call the Capital Area Sustainability Council. It has 10 members, both local governments, city and county, the three universities, the school system, the CONA, the Council of Neighborhood Associations, Home Builders Association, and I probably left somebody out. But anyway, we meet monthly, and we have some joint projects, and it's mainly a good time to exchange ideas, to let each other know what we're doing and how we can interface with each other and collaborate on projects.
Okay. And you had hit on something, Maggie, before, just in passing, but this seems to be one of the main motivators for doing this sort of thing is not just, oh, we feel good and we're fighting global climate change and all these esoteric things, but there are some real hard dollar savings attached to all these kinds of things. Bill, you'd mentioned what, $3 million savings?
Actually, more than $4 million since 2007. And as I said, that was primarily motivated by a dollars crunch on school districts, not just here but throughout Florida. And the superintendent at that point got together with the energy director at the school district and said, we just can't afford to pay these kinds of monthly utility bills. Do something. And that's basically how the CNG project came to pass, and also how various measures to reduce our consumption of electricity in the schools came to pass. We just had to save money. And, you know, the environmental impacts are important too, just as important. But equally important is our ability to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars and to get the biggest bang for our buck.
Yeah, I'm sure Elizabeth Swyman, same thing at Florida State. But you have some folks who look upon this because it is, oh, we have to spend less, we have to pull in our reins, and it's like we're admitting we're poor. We can't afford energy anymore. We can't afford to, oh, this broke instead of getting it repaired, and, you know, I just throw it away, which has been the American way of life. And so some folks, I think, object on that basis. It somehow diminishes us because waste is, well, I don't want to say fun, but it shows that you're affluent. I can afford to throw this away. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that anymore.
I think especially because of the population of students that I work with, a little different. You know, they're 18 to 22, a little bit older, and they are a little bit more used to this terminology and this way of life. The students that we see coming in are very green in the environmental way. They know what sustainability is coming in. This isn't new to them. And so our behavior change is focused a lot on, for the first time in their life, they have purchasing power and are free, you know. And so while we are doing behavior change work the same as our partners, it's a little bit more focused on how can you have this fun college experience and still be true to the values that you brought with you. They're a little bit more used to turning off the lights and coming from houses that recycled already and traveling by alternative transportation means. And so we're just trying to use our campus as a living laboratory for them to continue practicing those behaviors. And then when they go on into the community, whether it be Tallahassee or somewhere else, they've practiced them so much that it's just part of their daily life. And so we don't look at it as waste or saving money. It's just who they are now.
So you bet this becomes the normative behavior then.
Absolutely. And from day one this year when freshmen came to convocation, we wanted them to know that this is the way of life at Florida State University. And we are setting up our infrastructure for you to continue practicing that. So they were handed a reusable water bottle, and it was in line with the book that they read over the summer through their orientation program. And we said, these are the values of Florida State University. You are a Florida State student now. So how can we help you continue to learn about sustainability and build it into your life? And then when you go forth, it's there. It's done. And you don't have to embrace – it doesn't have to be your major. It doesn't have to be your major area of focus. It doesn't even have to be all the service that you do. It's just in you, and you can go off and do
and
stuff.
And Tom, Elizabeth just touched on a really important issue, and that's the learning component here. We're both representing educational institutions, so learning is our primary mission, teaching and learning. But, you know, it'd be all well and good if local governments and private homes and all the other segments of society did sustainably related practices. They reduced their electricity and they recycled at higher rates. But it would be not good enough if all those things happened and there wasn't an important component of learning that was going on with generations that are younger, because we're going to be leaving the world to them, and If they adopt our same bad habits that have gotten us to where we are today, we're lost. So the learning is, in my opinion, as or more important.
Yeah, and that cross-generational learning, like you said, there is nothing worse than being shamed by your kid.
True.
So if they learned this in the school district or and then a little bit later reinforced at an institution like Florida State, it will be more likely that those values will kind of trickle back up.
Right.
You know, through the rest of the family. Maggie Theriault, you got some things going on in the county, too, in regards to recycling programs. What used to be a throwaway landfill out there off of US 27 is now essentially a major recycling center. You got something coming up there, too, don't you?
We do. In fact, talking about the values of collaboration and partnering with Sustainable Tallahassee, coming up on November 10th, Saturday, we have the Celebration of America Recycles Day. And in essence, we have opened up the solid waste management facility for an open house. It kicks off in the morning with a 5K trash dash, which is a fundraiser for Sustainable Tallahassee. And participants will actually run the path of what is the old landfill. They'll be running over 20 years of this community's waste, and there's no more visceral experience than to see this, what is now seems to be a beautiful rolling hill, and know that that's the community's waste that's there. And then we'll move on to mid-afternoon for a very much family-centered, fun and engaging day where we do show folks that the solid waste management facility is no longer an active landfill, and it really offers many valuable resources. As you mentioned, recycling program is there on site, and that's many educational opportunities, and the tours that we give on a daily basis will be offered on November 10th during the celebration. We have the Household Hazardous Waste Center, and that sounds kind of technical and maybe, you know, scary, radioactive, but on site we have a swap shop, and residents can come bring old varnishes, ant killer, used motor oil, things that are no longer needed and quite frankly probably piling up in all of our garages, drop it off in a safe way to dispose of if it is at the end of its useful life, like your motor oil. But if that ant killer, it's just in a leftover bag, it goes to the swap shop, and future residents or visitors can take this home with them and put it to further use. And that goes for paint as well, other chemicals along those lines. We also have electronics recycling there on site, and we process that with a very strict chain of custody. You hear sometimes of these third world nations where these materials go. That is certainly not the case in our situation. But so, yes, November 10th is a great way for the family. They'll see a lot of our big equipment in action, have live music, get the physical fitness early in the morning, and sure to be a good day.
If I could just go back to the trash dash for again, we are so grateful to the county for inviting us to participate last year, and it's become a major fundraiser for Sustainable Tallahassee. It's a great course out there. People don't realize that they really developed that course, and a major part of it is the cross-country course that's utilized by the public schools for regular cross-country events. So it's a beautiful course. When I'm out there, I get nostalgic because before the county owned that property and before it was a solid waste facility, I was a part of a group that staged the Miller Landing Bluegrass Festival twice a year on the western edge of that property. And so when I go out there now as a part of the trash dash, I look across this field and remember bluegrass bands playing and people having a good time. And we, you know, that was a great time too.
Yeah, but now it's becoming a major, as you pointed out, recreational facility and opportunity for folks to really enjoy something that heretofore was you couldn't even imagine. For those folks who, you know, go down to Palm Beach County or Broward County and see the Mount Trashmores that they have down mm-hmm. there, there's no way they could be turned into a recreational facility. But we've done it here in Leon County.
We are, and we're exploring opportunities to continue transitioning this piece of property into a regional park, perhaps. Still to be determined how active or passive that park will be. But the back part of the property also includes a cross country course, and talking about collaboration, we'll soon be hosting an NCAA running event, and I'm a little outside of my expertise here, but we expect several thousand people to come from outside of the region. So in this case, it's an economic development engine that came out of, you know, not so great use of property there. So we are looking at full circle and how to redeem ourselves, so to say.
Okay.
I'm glad you mentioned economic development, because Sustainable Tallahassee's original reason for being was was not only environmental, but its original reason for being, and I know its current reason for being, is not solely to make the environment better, which is, of course, a great mission, a great goal. It's also to make this region, this capital of Florida, a capital for green business. So in my mind, at least, when we're talking about sustainability, it's not – and we're talking about green issues – it's at least as much an economic development issue as it is an environmental issue, because if we don't survive, if we don't sustain ourselves economically, everything, all bets are off. And when Sustainable Tallahassee was founded, the founders of the organization recognized, and I'm taking my Leon County Schools hat off now and putting that hat on, recognized that the two go hand in hand and had to go hand in hand.
And I think Tallahassee Community College does a really good job of that as well. They're using sustainability as a lens for a lot of their workforce development programs and economic right. development programs. So I think just, you know, some kudos to them for bridging that divide or that gap to make these things work for both issues.
Well, 2 days ago there was a manufacturers roundtable that was at the Advanced Manufacturing Training Center at TCC, and the City-County Economic Development Council did this thing. And I couldn't believe the number of manufacturers that showed up here. We had nearly 50 representatives of different manufacturing companies just within, you know, the Leon County area come out and talk about some of the economic development potential of not only training, but also looking to expand into realms such as sustainability, green energy, that kind of thing. A big push on this, and the general thought being, we can do this here. We can attract companies that are involved in these kinds of pursuits, be it alternative energy or whatever, because we've got the infrastructure, whether it's here at Innovation Park. We have the training opportunities through Tallahassee Community College, Workforce Florida, et cetera, et cetera. Then this could be a hub for that sort of thing. Thoughts? Anybody?
Well, I think some people, when they think of environmentalism, they think of tree hugging, and tree hugging may be a small component of environmentalism, but others of us think in terms of things like training mechanics to work on CNG vehicles, or training roofers to work on energy efficient, to lay energy efficient roofs versus non-energy efficient roofs. There are all kinds of jobs that are that have been recently created and that have not been created yet, that don't even exist, that will exist in the coming decades, that we have to be ready to prepare people for and to train people for. That's an economic development issue.
I've been a little bit involved on the periphery with the development of potential solar farms in Gadsden County from National Solar Power Company. One of the factors that they put heavy emphasis on in deciding that Gadsden County would be a site for that operation was the support that they were promised from TCC through, as you mentioned, Elizabeth, the Work Development Program, and that would be a training force for the people that would work in the solar industry. So it has this spinoff effect for the whole community when the universities get involved like that.
Mm-hmm. And you also have a demonstration thing, as I remember, Maggie, out at the Extension office, which has now become a zero building. It's not supposed to use any power at all except under extreme circumstances.
Right. It's as you mentioned, Cooperative Extension over by the fairgrounds on Paul Russell Road. This is a 50-year-old cinder block building, and we felt certainly education and outreach is a main mission of the folks there. But what better way than to demonstrate live these opportunities, both to citizens and businesses? So we have, as you mentioned, launched a net zero energy building, and this was accomplished by reducing and conserving our energy through more traditional levels, but also implementing a 17-ton geothermal system. This uses the Earth's nearly constant temperature of about 68 degrees to naturally heat or cool that air that's coming into the building. And then a 60 kW solar panel system, solar array. And this because of the educational component, often solar is placed on the roof. That's where you typically see it. But in this case, we ground-mounted it, and it serves as shaded parking, but also for visitors. They can get hands-on, tangible experience and exposure to the system. So not only is it producing building for producing energy for the building, but our visitors get to see and experience this. We've also implemented a 40,000-gallon rainwater capture system. So the rainwater that falls on the building's roof is held in cisterns underground and then is used to irrigate our landscape throughout the year. So we have the teaching component, going back to what Bill highlighted earlier, integrated in. But it's one thing to show PowerPoints and talk about these things, but to get the hands-on experience, and we have these energy monitoring softwares that really live show you as a cloud passes, you see the energy production drop or peak there, and you can see that imbalance to the current consumption. And literally, we have a hallway right next to this display. You can turn that hallway light off and on, and you watch the energy slightly tick up or down there. So both as young children that are very, very engaged and interested in these topics, but we get those same bright eyes from the adults, too, all the time.
Yeah, because we don't really know unless you go out and watch the meter. And now we have smart meters, at least within the city of Tallahassee, where you can actually see the real-time impact of what's going on in the house on your energy consumption, which can be a really eye-opening sort of thing. You know, you kick on a regular electric stove and see what happens to your kilowatt-hour.
And that's, I think that's really key, is the knowledge as well. We talked about kind of your base ethics, and certainly the younger generations, that's already largely instilled in many cases, but to have the knowledge and awareness there, so having access to real information and understanding the full system, whether it's the full system of where your waste goes, the full system of your energy consumption and the impacts of that, people are often quite willing to make those behavioral changes once they just understand it. So I think that's so much of what we're all doing here in the community.
Sustainability, that is what we're talking about here on Perspectives, and your input is welcome too. You got a thought or a comment? It's 414-1234 telephonically and perspectives at WFSU.org on the email. We'll be right back. I knew we could sustain this one way or another. Hey, we're talking sustainability here on Perspectives here, getting away from the political stuff at least for a while. But don't forget, if you have not already early voted, that's now a verb. Can you believe that, Bill? Yeah, did you early vote? Yes, absolutely I did. But anyway, we're coming up here on the 6th, which is the final day, of course, the actual election day. So please exercise your democratic duty, if you will. But we're talking sustainability today with some experts from City, County, School District and Florida State University. And before we go to your calls, Elizabeth Swyman from FSU, you wanted to kind of piggyback on something that Maggie Theriot was saying.
Absolutely. We were talking a little bit about the learning that's happening. And at FSU, it's really amazing to see how students are taking this learning and applying it out into the world. We have students and student organizations going out around the world and doing small solar projects and small water projects in countries near and far and even in their own community. And we have student organizations who are working with some of our partners in this room to build community gardens around town. And we have graduates from our College of Business who are really looking at social entrepreneurship as ways to look at sustainability and solving issues, whether they be environmental or not, or social issues around the world. So it's always really amazing to see the impact that we can get from knowing about sustainability and applying it around just to issues in our own community and far away.
Great point. Let's hop over the phones if we could here. Let's go to Brian up first. Hey, Brian, welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, how you doing today?
Hey, we're doing well. Thanks.
I was just calling in reference to, you're talking about the rainwater collection system and the solar system you have set up over the extension office.
Mm-hmm.
My in-laws were actually trying to do a similar thing. They were trying to build a completely off-the-grid home. They had installed solar panels, had rainwater collection, but when they were doing the permitting process, they were told they couldn't get their house permitted unless they were connected to the grid and had a well, and that they could not use their rainwater collection system, no matter how they filtered it, that they could not use it for water, drinking water. They could only use it for gray water. And I was just wondering about these ordinances here in Tallahassee that are making this not accessible for most people.
Great point, Brian. Thank you so much. Maggie, did you have a... feedback there?
I can't speak to the detailed knowledge of the individual permitting process either for the city or Leon County. It's a little outside of my expertise, and I don't want to just guess there. But one of the goals of the Sustainable Demonstration Center and implementing those cisterns, this building being 50 years old at the time it was built, it didn't have stormwater mandates of these large oversized ponds that you often see now. So anything we do on that property is viewed as an enhancement. So we have much more flexibility in this case, given the age of the building. So we have installed these in partly to assist both county and city growth departments to gather data to get their own comfort level, as well as the North Florida Water Management District. As cisterns, it's kind of funny, you know, the Greeks use these. These are thousands of years old in concept, but the application is somewhat novel these days. So it varies, you know, in parts of our country, but here locally, we are trying to use this system as a way to help those decision makers become more comfortable and understand the real implications of at least stormwater runoff in that case. I know this doesn't apply to Brian's situation, but the use of gray water, it all brings up a good point that policy often stands in way of good intentions. And I can say, at least on the surface, city, county, and those who make the policies in our community are very open to this. And we realize sometimes we do have to change the way we do things. And using community gardening as an example, the county right now just discovered that on a very technical basis, community gardens are considered illegal. Certainly, that's not our intent. That's not our will or what we want. But we're in cleaning up that policy right as we speak to make sure that that's not a hurdle anyone has to be facing. So sometimes we are evolving. We are working to do that. So, Brian, I encourage you or your in-laws to help us learn with you, and we don't want to be that burden. We don't want to stand in the way.
And piggybacking on that, I know several years ago in my first career as a journalist, I remember writing about green roofs and suggesting that green roofs, which are used in other communities. Chicago's gone very big on green roofs, which are a terrific tool for stormwater management. And in some sectors locally, when we suggested in the context of the Gain Street redevelopment that green roofs might be a really energy efficient great stormwater management tool and extremely attractive visually, there was some pushback because change is difficult, and governments, whether they're local governments, state governments, or federal governments, frankly, sometimes are resistant to change. So it's important for Brian and anybody else in the public, when there are opportunities to do things better, it's important for folks in the public to push back when they see governments being resistant to the kinds of change that Brian is describing.
And in the context of this particular community, as it's still growing somewhat but is still small enough that you can run into a city or a county commissioner just about anywhere, and it would seem at both the city and the county level we have commission structures now that are very amenable to not only streamlining the permitting process to take into account more things like green roofs or cisterns for, you know, water or backyard gardens or all that sort of thing, and that they can push that from the top policy level then and try to affect some of those changes within permitting and all that sort of thing.
One of the things that was impressive to me yesterday at the summit was that the large majority of our county commissioners were there. They participated, they moderated, they were in on the discussions, and that was really impressive to see that they as a commission and commission members had a commitment to sustainability and to the environment.
Yeah, and they're the ones who are going to have to make the change. Because I think on the city level you had something too. Well, DeVoe Moore, who put on that gigantic solar array on the roof of his antique car museum, was having all kinds of heartburn with the city because when he was pulling electricity from the grid, it was priced at a higher factor than the electricity he could generate from the roof to put back into the grid. And, of course, that's something, you know, they have to deal with the city. So, you know, these things are evolving. Let's go to line two. Michelle's hanging on there. Hi, Michelle.
Yes, good morning. I'm really glad I caught this show. I, too, am interested in off-the-grid housing. I don't know if your guests are familiar with Earthships out in Taos, New Mexico, where they offer an intern program, but I didn't realize we had something like that here, and just a little joke I shared with my friends that I'd someday love to have my own off-the-grid housing, and their response to me was, just stop paying your utility bills. You'll be off the grid.
Automatically, and you don't have to spend a cent. In fact, that's a problem. Okay, Earthships in Taos, New Mexico. Who knows anything about that?
Well, we do have the off-grid house at Florida State University, and it is it's a really interesting house that was built 4 or 5 years ago now, and it's tucked away behind some of our older science buildings. And it's a really interesting example of the research going into the technologies needed to make some of these houses completely off the grid. It's hydrogen technology, solar technology. And it is run by a research lab at Florida State, and there used to be somebody who lived in there so they could monitor the systems, and it was really – and they use it as an office space now, so we could track how the building lives and how people live in it to make those technologies marketable.
Okay. And that's the other question I have, folks, is that you have – whether it's sponsored by – a university, a research institution like that, or it's out at the Extension office, which I believe took a half million dollar grant to kind of put all that together, Maggie. How can the average person do this on an affordable basis? Because you even look at some of an Energy Star appliance is usually priced higher than a non-energy efficient appliance. So people look at the cost differential and go, God, I'd love to do this. I'd like to be more sustainable and green, but I can't afford it, is what it boils down to. Are those price points coming down or what?
I think so.
They are, but I think we miss the boat when we talk about it from an economic standpoint. I have solar in my home, both the solar hot water and the solar PV, and people are constantly asking me, what is my return on investment? And I say, how many things do you do in your life that bring you pleasure that have no return on investment? Your large boat, your golf cart, you know, just all these things, the toys and things that we have that have absolutely no return on investment. All of the energy efficiency things will ultimately pay off. It's just a long-term process. So you have to kind of be willing to invest on the front end to gain a benefit on the back end. And, of course, there are a number of incentive programs and rebates that can help with that. But need to look at it in terms of what's good for the environment, what's good for our world.
Well, okay. And on a micro level, a few years ago, my wife and I replaced the roof on our house. We chose roofing tiles that were energy efficient. They were a little bit more, not substantially more, but at the time we also received from on our taxes a tax credit for putting energy efficient roofing tiles on our house. Well, in the long run, being energy efficient, having energy efficient tiles on the top of our house, we're going to pay lower utility bills. So it's true that some of these things do cost more on the front end, but it's also partly a policy question, because if citizens like Michelle and like Brian and other folks out there tell their congressmen, tell their senators, we want policies that encourage energy conservation, that encourage sustainability, that give us tax credits for installing more energy efficient windows, more energy efficient tiles on our roof, et cetera, et cetera. It's more likely that those will either be implemented or return to implementation. Some of them have gone away. It does pay off in my mind. It's at least revenue neutral in the long run.
Okay, but given the political realities here, and we won't belabor this point, but just do we need to start talking in terms like return on investment and economic development potential and all this kind of thing, so that you get everyone, if you understand what I'm saying, get everyone behind this thing, not just those who, you know, want to save the planet and that sort of thing?
I think it's essential to highlight all the different aspects of it. You know, we can capture one group of people who believe one thing by focusing on the environmental side, and we can capture others by focusing on the economic side, and then they can start to see each other as mutually beneficial.
Okay, and not political enemies or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. Well, was any of that part of the discussion yesterday, Stu?
Oh, absolutely. One of the keynote speakers in the morning was Hazel Henderson, who is just a wonderful author. And she focused a lot on the ethical values of marketing and consumption and really just had a powerful message. I enjoyed what she had to say a lot.
Okay, and as we roll here towards the latter part of the program, if you're just joining us, by the way, we are talking about sustainability on perspectives today as we roll off of that seemingly interminable series of political perspectives focusing on the candidates in the run-up to the election. If we could again revisit the idea of how all this works together, where we have the school district, Bill Berlow, and Stu Parsons, the sustainable Tallahassee thing, and Elizabeth, what's going on Florida State, Maggie, what's going on at the county, how you guys all work together. Maggie, start with you.
Sure. Actually, kudos to Stu, which I must make a statement to. He's a volunteer executive director. Mm-hmm. So talk about sustainable practices. We're sustaining that nonprofit for as long as we can keep them in the ring here.
Or at least recycling them occasionally.
Oh, I don't know if they make that mold twice. But through the leadership of Stu, and he mentioned the Capital Area Sustainability Council, bringing the partners to the room to discuss, part of the collaboration is just knowledge sharing. So similar, we all have large buildings in our fleet, looking at the school board, FSU, the county, the city. And if I'm experiencing a stumbling block, chances are the facility staff at the Leon County School Board or the city have already been there and done that too, and they can offer advice. So part of it's just knowledge collaboration, and you don't really see any direct output of that sharing. And the other is very formal collaboration. We have a rotating blog and newspaper series in the Tallahassee Democrat featuring little insights and knowledge there on a biweekly basis. We have a community calendar now through Sustainable Tallahassee that's come to be that features all of our group activities and opportunities for citizens to continue their knowledge and participation in sustainability. So those are just a few.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we go back around the table, though, let's see if we can get in another call here. Let's start with Priscilla here, guys, if we could, on line one. Hey, Priscilla, welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm just calling to congratulate everyone, Maggie and Stu and Leon County, everyone here. It was such a great summit yesterday. I was there and I am so excited and pumped up about the possibilities for our community, and it gives me hope that I haven't felt for our country, because I know that there are communities like ours all around our country doing the same thing. And so I'm so appreciative of what they're doing, and I'm just thrilled to be a part of it and to jump on their bandwagon and help in any way I can, because they did an awesome job. They had great speakers. But like I said, the most important thing was the incredible people there that were so energetic and committed and conscientious about making this all better for all of us. And not, like you said, just to save the trees or whatever, but to make it economically feasible. And I'm just so impressed, and I am happy, happy, happy to live in this community, to have great people like them working on our behalf.
Well, Priscilla, you have some happy, happy people right here around the table. We really appreciate that. Quickly, guys, let's see if we can get Lisa in here before we go back around the table again. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I was at the conference also yesterday. We got a nice invitation for Appalachian Beekeepers Association, and we had a fantastic day. I came home with so many names and so many people who are interested. The production of the program, Janice Ray, all of it was so good. It was really, really great. One thing I heard from some of the presenters was that they were afraid that they were kind of singing to the choir on some of the issues, and Stan Rosenthal, who happened to be at the table next to me, said, you know, I think I'm going to talk to people about how to educate other people to bring them into the fold. And I thought that was a really good point. Obviously, everybody that was there yesterday had either invested, whatever kind of interest, but it's how do you get other people into our movement to make everything sustainable. And it was just excellent yesterday, all the way down to the recycling bins, the food. Everything had a zero footprint, and it was all local, and just like Priscilla, who I think I worked with yesterday, we were totally pumped.
Oh, that's great, Lisa. Well, really glad you enjoyed it. And folks, time runs short. In just a couple seconds here, Bill Berlow, final thought from you, if we could.
Well, I just wanted to piggyback on a topic that the callers brought up. One of the importance of the summits, like yesterday, or I attended a Learn Green conference in West Palm Beach a couple of weeks ago, is the people you meet. And it's not just to feel good. It's to share important information. I mean, for example, I ran into a guy from the Pasco County School District who was telling me about a really innovative stormwater management agreement between Pasco County Schools and Pasco County. Well, I'm going to get a copy of that and find out if we can apply it here. So it's very important that we continue to collaborate, that we expand our collaborations, and that we build on it.
Well, folks, with that, I think we're going to have to say thank you. Bill Berlow, also Stu Parsons, Elizabeth Swyman, and, of course, Maggie Theriault from Leon County. Thank you for coming on today on Perspectives, which is produced, by the way, by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox, Lydell Rawls over there on the phones and emails. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Hope you can join us again next week for Perspectives. We'll be in the run-up to Veterans Day and talking to some folks who are intimately involved in that observance and veterans issues in general. We'll catch you then on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.